he proposed to his uncle that he do a translation of this book that had been given to him. And Freud, perhaps without thinking too much about it, he approved the idea. So Bernays went about hiring a translator who was just a psychology PhD student that he found at Columbia University. And he got Stanley Hall to write an introduction for what would be published in 1920 as A General Introduction to Psychoanalysis. Now, shortly after this happened, Freud had second thoughts about authorizing Bernays to translate his lectures, particularly as he had been working with his trusted colleague, Ernest Jones, on translations. But by the time Freud wired Bernays to try to stop this publication, Bernays said that it was already too late and that the advertisements had already been placed and the publication was proceeding. But Bernays assured Freud that it would be all right. And he also assured him that he would get fame and glory and also a substantial recompense for the publication. Now, Freud was not too happy about this, nor was Ernest Jones. And when they finally received the translation that Bernays had done, they were particularly upset.
Welcome to the Psychoanalysis On and Off the Couch podcast. For the past few years, we've been speaking with analysts from around the world who've been applying their analytic way of thinking, not only to their offices, but also off the couch, in venues external to their consulting rooms. We've spoken to analysts who work in hospitals, in prisons, in community health centers, in refugee clinics, just to name a few. We've also detoured, of course, during COVID. We've spoken with analysts again from around the world to learn from our communities how they, their patients, and the analytic community in general have been dealing with this crisis. And hopefully, the worst is over, and we can return to our main focus. We can return to speaking to analysts who are bringing their skills to people who otherwise would never see the inside of an analyst's office. In addition to that, we're speaking with the elders of our field, people who have been practicing this craft for 40 and 50, sometimes longer years, to learn from them what they have to teach us, not only about this piece of history that we're all living through, but their reflections on our field. Please visit us at our website, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can leave a comment, where you can subscribe. I hope you find these conversations thoughtful and meaningful. And I appreciate your listening. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Joseph Melharik. Joseph Melharik is a historian who holds a PhD in American Studies from George Washington University in Washington, D.C. And we discuss a recent paper of his called Freud's American Nephew, Edward Bernays and the Selling of Psychoanalysis. And many listeners may know who Edward Bernays is, many may not. I sort of had a vague idea, and reading this paper really fleshed out who he was. He was, as the title implies, the nephew of Freud. The lineage is something we get into because it's a curious bloodline between them. But he was, in fact, Freud was his uncle. And Edward Bernays was actually a famous man in the United States. He was the father of the field of public relations. And how he got there is also sort of an interesting story, which you'll hear about. But he developed a relationship with his uncle and, in fact, became his pro bono literary agent, selling his books in the States. And that did many things. It popularized Freud's work, but it also provided vital funds for the Freud family during the interwar years in Austria, where the economic times were terrible. And we flesh this out in our conversation. And we also talk about Bernays's efforts in the pro-democracy movement, which between the wars was an important public relations effort to counter Nazi propaganda, which was very influential here in the States. As I mentioned, Joseph Malharak is a historian. He was a junior Butt-Stibber Fellow of the Institute for Advanced Study at Central European University, and he has been a Fulbright Visiting Professor of Austrian American Studies at the University of Vienna. He's published widely on the topic of transatlantic migration, 20th century intellectual history, and the history of capitalism and consumer culture. His book, Free Market Socialists, European Emigres Who Made Capitalist Culture in America, 1918 to 1968, was recently published by the Central European University Press. And this current paper is published now in Psychoanalysis and History, Volume 25, Number 1, 2023, pages 59 and 68. And there's a citation in the show notes. I learned a great deal from reading this paper and really picking up on a little esoteric piece of psychoanalytic history that I thought our listeners might enjoy as I did. Here is my conversation with Joseph Malharak. Joseph, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you here. Joseph, if you were to have asked me who Edward Bernays was, I would have answered by saying I had some sense that he was a relative of Freud's. I may have recalled that he was a nephew, but I certainly wouldn't have been able to describe how he was a nephew, what the lineage was that connected them. Mm-hmm. I would have said that he was the founder of the public relations field. And I also would have recalled that his reputation was less than stellar, that there was something dark around his name and his work, though I couldn't have described in any detail what that was. So I came across your paper, Freud's American Nephew, Edward Bernays and the Selling of Psychoanalysis, and I learned a great deal. About those three issues, I learned, A, that he was, in fact, his nephew, and I learned how they were related, which I'm going to ask you to recount in a moment. I learned he indeed was the founder of the field of public relations, but I certainly didn't know that he sort of found himself in it by publicizing a play about syphilis, and it was a play designed to change people's minds about it from being a moral failing to being a public health issue, which, of course, would have pleased his uncle a great deal. Right. And about his reputation, it was far more complex than just negative. And in reading your paper and what we're going to talk about today, I learned that he was a key player in introducing Freud's works to the American public between the wars. And in doing so, and in acting as his pro bono literary agent, he also helped support Freud and his family in the terribly difficult economic times in Vienna after World War I. And I also learned that he was a major player in the pro-democracy movement, which was designed to offer a public relations counterpoint to Joseph Goebbels and Nazi propaganda. So there's much to learn, and I thought our listeners might enjoy, as I did, learning about this little esoterica of psychoanalytic history. So I'm going to ask you to start off by telling us about his genealogy, but I do want to read just a couple of sentences from your opening paragraph from your paper, where you comment on his reputation, which is what I was under the influence of. You write, "Observers have drawn the almost irresistible conclusion that Bernays masterfully applied Freud's theories of repression and the unconscious to deviously manipulate the behavior of masses of Americans and undermine democracy in the process." So that's where my thinking came from, and you're going to correct that thinking for others as well. But start us off and tell us, who was this man?
Well, Edward Bernays, as you mentioned, was a publicist, a public relations expert. But I guess for the purposes of this conversation, it would be interesting to talk about his relationship to Freud. So yes, he was his nephew. And in fact, in a very interesting way, Freud was Bernays's uncle twice over. So Edward Bernays's mother, Anna, was Freud's younger sister. And Edward Bernays's father, Eli, was the older brother of Freud's wife, Martha. So what had happened is Eli Bernays and Sigmund Freud had married each other's sister, and Martha Bernays and Anna Freud had married each other's brother. So they had it was a very intimate relationship.
I just want to add that I had to read that, because you wrote that in the paper. I had to read that relationship many times, and I'm not sure I can still picture it, but the way you captured it, he was his uncle twice over, I think is a nice succinct way of saying it.
Yeah, it's a very tied up relationship. So it was close in that respect, which is relevant to how the relationship developed later on. So Bernays's family, his father's family had moved to Hamburg from Vienna in 1869. And Bernays himself was born in Vienna on November 2nd, 1891. And the family moved to the U.S. about a year after Edward Bernays's birth. His father, Eli, became a successful grain exporter on the Manhattan Produce Exchange. So that's how they came to New York. But in New York, they sort of maintained their Austrian customs. The German language was spoken in the household, and the Viennese traditions were maintained. And throughout Edward Bernays's youth, his uncle Ziggy, as he was referred to, was, you know, revered in the household, this kind of famous figure, particularly after the Interpretation of Dreams was published in 1900. And the Bernays family maintained a relationship with Freud over the years. They would periodically visit Austria on holiday before the war. And as a child, you know, Edward Bernays had fond memories of his uncle. They, you know, took vacations to the lake, and they would stroll around the lake, and he had fond memories of his uncle. A little later on in life, Bernays had a couple of other encounters with his uncle. He briefly met him in 1909 when Freud was invited to the U.S. for the Clark University lectures, the sort of the famous lectures that he did at Clark University, invited by Stanley Hall, the president of that university. And then again before the war in 1913, Bernays made a trip to Europe, and he met his uncle once again in Karlsbad. This is the first time he really engaged with him as an adult.
Just to be clear, your reference to the war, most references to the war, right? Yes, I want to clarify
that. Yes, the first
World
War.
All this action you just described was before the First World War. Okay.
Yes, and then after the First World War, Bernays attended the Paris Peace Conference, and while he was there, he sent a box of cigars to his uncle, and Freud returned the favor by sending Bernays a copy of his new book, which was a collection of introductory lectures on psychoanalysis. And these are lectures.
Let me interrupt you, because we're going to get to the whole book arrangement in a moment. But start us off, and now that we have the lineage more or less in our minds, Bernays's reputation. You go into that in your paper. Help us understand what made it as clouded as it seems to have been.
Yeah, so there are a number of reasons why I think the reputation is misunderstood. And this is both in academic sources and in popular sources. So you have academic sources like Elizabeth Rudinesco wrote a biography of Freud, and she notes that Bernays relied on Freudian concepts in his work.
But she says that in a critical way, is that right? She means that in a less than complimentary way, is that right?
Yes, it's to suggest that he used Freudian concepts to do his business machinations, to do his sort of, you know, in the ways that he would work for corporate clients to manipulate the public. I mean, she may have a more pure view of what, you know, Freudian psychoanalysis is supposed to be about. But, I mean, her view of it, which is, you know, not to fault her specifically, because this is a very common view, which is that Bernays had taken these ideas and sort of bastardize them in a way. And this idea comes up again and again. So Larry Tye is a biographer of Bernays, and he said that Bernays was taken with Freud's novel theories, and that he sought to exploit the passions and instinctual drives of the public in order to shape their behavior. And there's another media scholar by the name of Stuart Ewan, and he is perhaps one of the best known commenters on this topic, because he appears, for example, in Adam Curtis's documentary film, The Century of the Self, from 2002, which purveys a lot of these ideas about Bernays as this master manipulator. And right. Stuart Ewan, this media scholar, has a very skeptical view of Bernays, and he sees them as this master manipulator. And he points out certain things, like, you know, for the fact that the Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels had a copy of one of Bernays's books on his shelf. So the implication is that, you know, he's a bit of a sinister figure. And that film by Adam Curtis, mm-hmm. The Century of the Self, Bernays is a very prominent figure in that film. And it's I think his reputation really comes probably from this film more than anything else. And the whole idea of the film is that there's this guy in the United States, in America, maybe you haven't heard of him. His name is Edward Bernays. He's this publicist. He happens to be the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And guess what? He used Freud's ideas to manipulate the masses and reduce us all into sheep and, you know, get corporations to convince us to do their bidding. And like, it's kind of a narrative about how the 20th century went and with the rise of media technologies. And, you know, this is sort of the idea of Bernays, that he's basically taking Freud's ideas and using them to manipulate the masses. So that's really, that idea has really stuck. And part of the reason that I wanted to write this article is because through my research, I've found that I don't think that's quite the case. And I wanted to really provide an account of what Bernays' actual relationship with Freud was, which was real.
Yeah. And you did a very convincing job.
It was not the relationship of a mentor and a protege. That is,
right.
Bernays was not learning his methods from Freud. He had a different sort of relationship with Freud.
You make clear in your paper that he really didn't have much interest in Freud's ideas. If it was to be known, that he never read any of the books that he publicized, I would believe it from your account, that he really just saw it as merchandise to move, and he wanted to do it to help his uncle. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes. I mean, that is really how their relationship was established. Should I go into the general?
Well, let me read just a couple of sentences that set the stage for Bernays and Freud's connection that set him up to be his literary agent. You write, there was a buzz about psychoanalysis that Bernays had picked up on. It was a new sex discovery talked about in Sunday newspaper supplements, and Freud had become an interesting figure who might be fun to meet among middle-class intellectuals. It was considered sexy and even daring to publish a book by Freud. And then you go on to say, and this is in a letter that Bernays wrote to his uncle. He wrote, "Psychoanalysis is growing in importance in America, and there's an ever greater field of interest in it." He assured his uncle that the publisher of this book was using advertisements and other publicity methods to wage an extensive campaign on behalf of Freud's book. For Bernays, psychoanalysis was not so much a method for manipulating the masses as it was yet another idea to be publicized like any other. So tell us about how he got to be his literary agent and sort of the conflicts they had over it, and how important the financial resources it provided was for Freud and his family.
Yeah, so this all occurred, you know, in the early years after the First World War, when Bernays was sort of establishing himself as an expert in this publicity field. Now, during the war, he had worked as a propagandist, really, for the U.S. Committee on Public Information. And he sort of came to the conclusion that, you know, the ways in which governments use the media for propaganda purposes during wartime could be used during peacetime as well to promote ideas of corporations. So Bernays set up this, what he called it initially, a publicity direction business with his wife, Doris Fleischmann. And he started calling himself this a counselor of public relations. So he borrowed this term from the legal profession sort of to give himself legitimacy. And one of his first clients was actually the publisher of these daring and avant-garde books, Bonai and Liveright. And, you know, as Bernays was setting up this business, he realized that he had received from his uncle a copy of this, these introductory lectures on psychoanalysis. And it occurred to him that it would be an interesting book for this publisher to distribute because it was interesting in these, the way that Bernays put it is that Liveright, they were interested in the selling business, whereas a lot of publishers were simply interested in publishing. But this was actually a sexy idea. So
he wanted to move product kind of thing, right?
He wanted to move product. So he proposed to his uncle that he do a translation of this book that had been given to him. And Freud, perhaps without thinking too much about it, he approved the idea. So Bernays went about hiring a translator who was just a psychology PhD student that he found at Columbia University. And he got Stanley Hall to write an introduction for what would be published in 1920 as a general introduction to psychoanalysis. Now, shortly after this happened, Freud had second thoughts about authorizing Bernays to translate his lectures, particularly as he had been working with his trusted colleague, Ernest Jones, on translations. But by the time Freud wired Bernays to try to stop this publication, Bernays said that it was already too late and that the advertisements had already been placed and the publication was proceeding. But Bernays assured Freud that it would be all right. And he also assured him that he would get fame and glory and also a substantial recompense for the publication. Now, Freud was not too happy about this, nor was Ernest Jones. And when they finally received the translation that Bernays had done, they were particularly upset. For example, the term Verdrängung had been translated as suppression rather than repression. Now, this is before the standard translations of...
And that's a big deal.
Yes, I mean, they were very interested in getting these things very precise. And all of this stuff in the English context was still being worked out. This is before the standard edition translations had been done.
Right.
So it was all very new. There had been some translations of Freud's work in English in the U.S. done by Abraham Brill, but Freud was also not too pleased with those translations. So when he found out that, you know, Bernays had done this, he was a bit aghast because he thought more attention would go into it. But Bernays said that, you know, it's already going forward. We placed the advertisements and we've got to go through with this. He basically dismissed the complaints from his uncle and said, you know, this is going forward. So the book was published and Freud eventually sort of accepted the fact that this was out there. And eventually he started getting royalty payments.
It was a significant seller, yeah?
Well, yes. This was the thing that sort of changed Freud's view of things because he started to realize that he could make money off of it. In fact, later on, he would say that this was the only book that sells. So he started receiving these regular royalty payments. And in fact, most of the correspondence between Freud and Bernays is concerning this topic. It's about, you know, Freud would say, I haven't got this royalty payment. Where is it? Or he would direct Bernays to send the royalty payment to a particular bank account. He had many bank accounts set up in order to receive these royalty payments. He was, I think, trying to avoid confiscation.
Right. The reason for having these multiple bank accounts in different countries was because he had some anticipation that things in Vienna might go south and it would be confiscated. So he was protecting. It wasn't just for him. It was for caring for his family as well. Yeah.
Yes. He was worried about that. And also, this was the time of hyperinflation in Austria. So it was important that, right, you know, he had a stable currency to draw from. So it was good for him that the royalties from, first of all, coming in American dollars, and they were being sent to accounts in the Netherlands and the United Kingdom. Bernays was in a sense supporting his family, because Freud had these dependents, which included, you know, Bernays' family members. So a lot of what Bernays was doing was, you know, setting up the publication of this book for his famous mm-hmm. uncle and directing the royalties to Freud, but which were eventually getting filtered to Freud and Bernays' family members in Austria. So it was essentially, it was kind of a family affair. And so Bernays, in a sense, was doing a favor for Freud by going through with this. But at the same time, it served a very distinct purpose for Bernays to have this association with his famous uncle, which served him later on throughout his career. And I think contributes to the idea of Bernays as being a Freudian. It's essentially a kind of American Freud for business, is I think how he's sort of understood, that he applied these Freudian ideas to
American Freud for business. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's sort of how he understood. And you can see how Bernays was very happy to have this be the impression. And so whenever there's, for example, an article, a profile of Bernays, and they would occur frequently in trade publications and sometimes popular publications, Time Magazine, whatever it is, a local newspaper or a business or marketing trade publication, inevitably, in the first paragraph, what will be mentioned is that Bernays was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And the implication of that was immediately clear, because what was being talked about is that he had insight into the consumer mindset, you know, and he knew how to access the unconscious, and he knew how to make people do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. And, you know, in the public mind, they had a very vague idea of what psychoanalysis was, who Freud was. He was just this famous figure. But simply by this association, it certainly served Bernays in promoting himself and his own business.
Though while he didn't accept any money for being a literary agent, you're saying it helped his reputation otherwise. You mentioned that it was always brought to the listener's attention that he was a relative of Freud. After reading your article and getting interested in who this guy was, I went online, of course, and on YouTube, there's an appearance of Edward Bernays on the David Letterman show, which is a very popular show here in the States. It was from 1985, and Bernays was 93. He lived to 103, and they talk about his life's work. He was famous for a number of things, one of which was selling a lot of ivory soap, which he was very proud of. But again and again, his relationship with Freud, including a picture of him when he was young with his uncle, was the focus of the conversation. So just to support what you're saying, he, though in this case, from what I saw, it wasn't he bringing it up. It was more David Letterman bringing it up. So it goes both ways. You describe in your paper that their relation was at times contentious. They obviously had very different mindsets, Freud being a scholar and Bernays being a businessman. And you write, and you provide a quote in this correspondence from Freud to his nephew that I think is so charming, I wanted to read it. You write, "Given their familial bonds and unequal stature, Freud, who warmly signed his letter, your uncle, was prone to be somewhat impolite to Bernays, particularly on business matters." And then you quote a letter he wrote. He says, "Dear Edward, don't forget, as an old relative, I have a certain prerogative to render myself unpleasant at times. But I am fond of you and trust our relations will continue more intimate than ever." And I never met the man, but that just jumps out at me as what I imagine would be a very Freud-type correspondence.
Yeah.
It's straightforward. It's clear. It's warm and playful, but also very boundaried.
Yes. Well, I mean, Bernays had all kinds of publicity ideas and schemes that he would propose to his uncle. For example, there was a proposal to have Freud write a weekly column or a regular column in a popular magazine, and it would be the ideas that, you know, Sigmund Freud would be writing about a variety of topics that might be of interest to a mass audience. And one topic was, for example, the wife's mental place in the home. So there were all kinds of ideas like this that Bernays would propose to Freud, but he would invariably turn them down. Another idea was a lecture tour of the United States to promote the book. And I think Freud was offered a substantial payment
a lot of money
for that, but he turned it down. He was also offered opportunity. He was given the opportunity to write an autobiography from Livewright, the publisher, with an advance of $5,000. And that was in 1929, but he turned it down because Freud said that he wouldn't be interested in divulging any details about his personal life, which is the only thing that would make it interesting. So from Bernays's perspective, it was all about publicity.
What the listener will likely be familiar with is Freud was not a lover of America. He really thought conceptually the way he pictured America was that it trivialized and monetized his ideas that he felt were more nuanced and substantial than Americans would see them. And so he engaged in this transatlantic communication with a real suspiciousness. And when he was invited to write these magazine articles, it sort of supported his idea of the sort of trivialization that he saw Americans doing to his profound ideas. And he turned down, like you pointed out, very substantial sums in order to maintain what he felt was his integrity.
Right.
Now, there's a whole section in your paper where you talk about Bernays's political involvement. This was between the wars. And while we may think, looking back from this point in history, 100 years later, that America was resolute to join the war and defend democracy, that was far from the case. And there was a whole propaganda movement from Germany and other such countries that were trying to influence Americans to not get into the war. And Bernays really had an epiphany in terms of recognizing that his skill in selling ivory soap can also influence people in a pro-democracy way. So why don't you fill us in on that?
Yeah, I mean, he really saw himself as working against the America firsters, the idea that, you know, we shouldn't get involved.
And say who they are.
Basically, the idea, you know, the people who are sympathetic to, I don't want to say they're sympathetic to Adolf Hitler, but essentially, they didn't believe it was America's business to get involved in the war that was happening in Europe. And the fight against
and
fascism
many of them
was,
were pro-German.
Yes, yes. And in this context, I mean, Bernays was very much pro-democracy, very anti-fascist. He saw the stakes in this fight, and he knew which side he wanted to be on. So it's a little bit ironic that, you know, figures like Stuart Ewan, who I mentioned earlier, sort of paint Bernays as being this anti-democrat. But in this context, when it really did matter, and the democracy as an idea really was at stake, Bernays really, I think, was on the right side here. And he wrote, for example, in 1940, he wrote a book called Speak Up for Democracy. It was just a short book, just a kind of pamphlet. But the idea was, you know, how can an ordinary citizen speak up to defend democracy and join the fight against fascism? So he really, you know, established himself as a pro-democracy figure in that context. And he also talked about something called, the way he put it was the engineering of consent. And this is another thing that I think has been sort of misunderstood in Bernays's legacy. He's referring to a concept that Walter Lippmann, the political theorist and columnist, mm-hmm. had come up with called the manufacture of consent. And it's understood as being an idea that's very skeptical of the capacity of individuals to engage as democratic citizens. But really what Bernays especially was talking about is, you know, consent. He gets that idea from the Declaration of Independence, the idea of the consent of the governed. And now in a dictatorship, you don't need the consent of the governed. You just tell them what is going to happen, what they're going to do. But in a democracy, you need to create that consent. So that is how Bernays saw himself and his role. He could be the person who could convey these ideas to the public. And he didn't see propaganda as a negative thing insofar as it could promote lies, because he thought that eventually the truth would come out. So what he wanted to do was magnify, this is how he put it, he wanted to magnify the truth. He wanted to demonstrate, you know, positive and progressive ideas and show how those ideas could be beneficial to a democratic government. And so that's how he saw his role. And he, you know, he was a communicator. And his role as a public relations expert, he always put it in a certain way. He called it a two-way street. It wasn't just that he was communicating messages to the public, but he was also interpreting the public for his client. So he, and if his client was the government or his client was a big corporation, it was always telling that client, what is the public thinking? What is their mood? What are their opinions? So that's how he saw his role, as kind of a mediator between people who had a big voice in the mass media and the public who needed to participate in this democracy, but it's not necessarily obvious how they're going to participate or how they're going to get their knowledge. So that is really how Bernays saw his role, as a kind of mediator between these two.
Joseph, this is not your bailiwick. Freud, Bernays, psychoanalysis, that's not where you do most of your research. Share with us how you got interested in this.
Yeah, I mean, I started off doing a dissertation on the history of marketing and market segmentation. So I was presenting papers at a lot of conferences, speaking to a lot of academics on this topic. And invariably, the figure of Edward Bernays came up. And at first, I didn't know who he was at all. And so I had to find out. But I also realized that there was this idea of him that was really stuck from those sources that I mentioned earlier, Stuart Ewan, the Adam Curtis documentary, yeah. This idea that he's this Freudian master manipulator, that idea has really stuck. And the more I looked into it, the more I discovered that this was not quite the case. So what actually happened is that I was doing a fellowship at the Library of Congress. And I was actually working on another project on my book, Free Market Socialists, features a figure, Victor Gruen. He's an Austrian architect. He's known for inventing the shopping mall. And I was looking into that and some other things in the archives at the Library of Congress. But I noticed at the time that the Edward Bernays papers were also there. And since I had been asked so much about Edward Bernays, who is this guy, what's going on with him, I thought I would look into it. And I've also always had an interest in Freud and psychoanalysis. So to learn that they had this very interesting relationship was very compelling. And their correspondence is right there in the library too. So that's how I got into the topic. And I really wanted to write the article just to sort of correct the record about this, you know, what was Bernays doing with regard to Freud? And I mean, essentially, you know, he was working as his literary agent, and he was helping out a family member. And he was promoting himself by his association. So that's sort of the idea that I wanted to get across here.
Well, you've certainly corrected the record. I learned, as I mentioned, learned a great deal from your paper. It's very deeply researched. And for those who are enticed by this, the reference will be in the show notes. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your research, which, as I say, is so impressive, and for setting the record straight about an important but underappreciated figure in the history of our field. So I'm grateful for that. And thanks for spending time with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.